Mountain State Mysteries contains mature themes and discussions that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. All individuals mentioned in this episode are considered innocent until proven guilty in a court of law.
Hey, y'all. I'm your host, Mark Covey.
And I'm Courtney.
And this is Mountain State Mysteries. The case we have for you today is about a man who vanished from Buchanan, West Virginia in July of 2012. In this case, there's a rumored murder for hire. This is the case of Luke David Stout. Luke was born on July 6, 1988. He was the youngest of four boys, and his mother Elizabeth would call them the Four Musketeers.
That is so stinking cute. I'm gonna take it that the boys were close.
That's how I took it. I mean, Luke was the youngest of four. He was a very selfless person, and he wanted to help his mom out along with his friends. He was the kind of person who was always thinking of others. Like most teenagers, he got a job at 16 and began working in an effort to help his mom out financially.
That's awesome. I mean, to help your mom out like that.
It really is. And because of his help, his family was able to stay in their home and have food on the table. His family lived in Buchanan, West Virginia. It's a small town with just over 5,000 residents, and it's home to the West Virginia Wesleyan College, which shout out to the criminal justice class there, because we found out not too long ago that Mountain State Mysteries is discussed in their classes.
Yeah, I go to Buchanan quite a bit for work, so I mean, it's a really cool little town, and if you ever go to Buchanan's, go to CJ Maggie's to eat. It's amazing.
I've heard good things about there.
Oh my God, it's such good food. And they also have a major strawberry festival come spring of the year.
I'm down to go.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. I love strawberries. Like many kids growing up in West Virginia, Luke and his brothers loved the outdoors. However, Luke was known to like video games, playing his guitar, and many said he was really good at it. In July of 2012, Luke was a 24-year-old man who lived with his mother.
It kind of makes you wonder why a little bit, because I know guys crave independence more.
Well, his mother had become terminally ill, and he really just wanted to be there for her every step of the way.
Again, that is amazing that her son would do that.
Right? He loved his mother. When he traveled for work while working construction, he would always call home, sometimes multiple times a day just to check on his mother. He would even buy things to bring home to her. Like I said, Luke had three older brothers, and the whole family was known to be close.
In 2012, while Luke lived with his mother to help care for her, all of his brothers were still involved in helping. Earlier that year, Luke had let his car insurance lapse. And while he had a vehicle, he could not drive it. One thing that we couldn't find in our research is if he was making the responsible decision by not driving, or if something else happened, like maybe he could have lost his license. But we do know that his car stayed parked and he knew he couldn't drive. So his other option was his bike, which he knew he would have to rely on it as his main transportation. But his bike needed a lot of repair.
On the afternoon of July 18th, 2012, Luke told his mother and one of his brothers, who was at the home that day, that he was taking his bike to his friend Dylan's house, and they were going to work on it and fix it up. He told his mother that Dylan had the right tools he needed to fix the bike. In exchange, he would help him fix his bike. So Luke grabbed his bike and told his mother that Dylan told him he was sending someone to come pick up Luke and his bike, and he had to meet them at the end of the driveway.
So, out of curiosity, did his mom or brother, either one, see him get picked up?
No, they actually just watched him walk down the driveway carrying his broken bike until he was out of sight. So, sadly, they didn't get to see him get picked up. And they would sadly never see or hear from him again. Luke's brothers began looking around town for him as soon as he didn't come home that evening. His mother also got out and, despite being sick, looked for her son. The police were not interested in taking a report, at least not yet. Luke was a 24-year-old adult, so to police, his family needed to wait. But an interesting aspect of his story is that no one is really 100% sure who his friend Dylan was.
Excuse me?
Well, his mom said he actually had several friends named Dylan.
So, I mean, kind of like how your dad is with his friends named Jeff.
Literally, I think Dad has like 20 friends named Jeff. Like, he has some as Jeff in his phone, some as nicknames. Like, you literally have to go, what Jeff are you talking about? To where you know.
That reminds me back in my day of dating. Your girl here had Mad Game. Okay, I did. I had Mad Game. And it was talked to so many guys that I had to put the location that they were there from because I had to be able to keep them straight.
Lord.
I totally get it.
His mom said that they'd been unable to determine which Dylan he was meeting with that day.
So none of the Dylans came forward.
No.
In all honesty, that's not a good look on any of the Dylans that he allegedly knew.
Right? Like, I got thinking, what, you know, if it was us in that situation and we were meeting with someone, I feel like we would say, like, hey, I'm going to meet with Dylan. We're going, and, like, I know you and I would have been like, which one?
Yeah, I mean, I know how we are with each other. And especially, like, if we're going somewhere, we'll let each other know.
Right.
Where we're going to be and things of that nature in case something would ever happen.
Right. So a few days after Luke disappeared, his brothers were still searching around and they found his bike behind a CVS pharmacy.
So was it near anything?
It was just leaning up against a trailer.
Had it been fixed?
No, it was still broke. When his brothers called the Buchanan police, they were advised to just take the bike back home with them.
See, this is what pisses me off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, they could have been like, hey, that's awesome. Please do not touch the bike. There could be fingerprints on it, something of that nature. And then they were just said, hey, good to know. Take the bike home.
Literally.
Like, so many questions. Like, this is what irritates me so bad when so many missing people came up.
Yeah, because, I mean, as I'm sure there was DNA on it, they could have got some. I mean, hello, touch DNA. Like, whoever touched the bike, boom, you would have got it. As of what they were told to do with it, well, they literally just kept it. Like, that's all they, like, they still have it, as far as I know.
So, I know, and you know, but we have to let our audience know. Was there any type of investigation?
I mean, you should know the answer is no. They did not search the area. In fact, they didn't even drive out to look around.
You've got to be kidding me.
I really wish I was.
Hey, y'all. I'm Dan, and I host a podcast called Kinfolk, Stories of Community and Connection. I talk with folks from all over Appalachia, artists, small business owners, local legends, you name it. We share real stories about what brings us together, what keeps us going, and all the magic tucked away in these hills. If you're into small town charm, big hearts, and good conversation, come hang out with me on Kinfolk. You can find it wherever you get your podcast.
At this time, they didn't believe anything happened to Luke. Now, his family knew this wasn't like him.
So, someone, as what we have already learned, 24 years old,
mm-hmm.
Taking care of his mother.
Yeah.
Close to his brother.
Right.
And they're saying it was completely normal for them not to hear from a 24-year-old, especially one who was close to his family.
Yeah. But his family knew that wasn't like Luke. He had never stayed out of touch with his family.
Exactly.
His mom, Elizabeth, was desperate for answers. She knew in her heart that something was wrong. She began trying to get the attention of the local police and media.
So I have to ask, did it work?
I mean, a few local media outlets did pick up her story after time, but not many. Even when they did, it was just a little news story. It wasn't like anything amazing. So, Court, in the document, I have a picture of the road that Luke and his mother lived on. Do you want to describe it to everyone listening?
Yeah, so there's a few houses next to one another. Like, not right upon one another, but you do have neighbors. And there's, I guess, what could be either a business or a junkyard with a bunch of trucks lived next door to where they lived.
So the reason I brought this up is that even though there are homes and possible businesses near, no one claims to have seen anything on the day he went missing. In August, his story gets a little interesting and people start talking.
So why's that?
Because a young man's body was found in the area in a shallow grave.
Oh my gosh.
I know. Sadly, it wasn't Luke. It was a guy named Joshua Oberg. He had been missing from the area since January of 2012. Not too long after his body was discovered, two men was arrested for his murder. Jesse Lee Heater and Robert Eugene Siren III.
What was the charges?
Taking a payment of $5,000 to kill Joshua and get rid of him.
So, murder for hire?
Pretty much.
Who was behind the idea?
It was a local restaurant owner named Rodolfo Gomez, better known as Chino, which he did eventually plead guilty to the crime.
Why did Chino plan all of this?
Well, apparently Joshua has been having an affair, or at least cheated with Chino's wife. Which, when this came out, some other things also came to light. A couple months before Luke disappeared, he came home after an altercation with none other than Chino.
So, why was there an altercation with Chino?
All that I know is that allegedly Chino had shoved a gun at Luke's head hard enough to leave an imprint of the barrel. When he went home and his mom saw it, she urged him to file a police report against Chino. Allegedly, the police refused to document the incident. During my research, I found out that there's basically two different stories as to what happened. The first is that Luke claimed that he was assaulted by Chino and no one would listen to him. The reason for the assault was that Luke himself had also cheated with Chino's wife. Now again, this is alleged and not confirmed, but I do know that they did know each other.
I think Chino needs to be paying attention to his wifey.
Yeah.
Because this is number two that allegedly had an affair with his wife.
Yeah.
And if we've learned anything in our research, things that we've watched on TV, things about affairs, women are known to have affairs simply for the attention aspect of it. A man has it for sexual reasons. 99% of the women will have it for attention.
Yeah, which, I mean, I did learn some stuff off the record from our friend Alex. You know, I won't give that away. You know, I can definitely see why she cheated.
What is story number two?
Is that Luke found himself in some trouble one night and was arrested. He was drunk when the police brought him in, and he began to run his mouth about Chino. It was then that he supposedly told the police the story of his attack, and the police advised him to come back and file an official report when he was sober.
And I have to ask, did he?
Sadly, no. And police have not commented on which version is actually true. Elizabeth began to feel like no one was listening to her. The rumor started to fly about a local police officer that was drinking at some bars and running his mouth about Luke. So Elizabeth did what any mother would do, and she went to the media. It turned out that this officer had 11 DUI convictions. Motions were then made to have him dismissed from the force.
Like, number one, how in the world does someone have 11 DUI convictions?
Yeah, I have no idea.
And keep their license, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And how do you keep your job with the police department?
Yeah, honestly, I'm not too sure. Like, it blew my mind when I found that out.
Like, how does that even happen?
Yeah, I have no idea. In September, Elizabeth was charged with assault of an officer.
How?
She was in her hospital bed, hooked up to IVs, when she began arguing with the officer. At some point, she took her IVs out herself and threw them at him.
Okay, number one, ouch.
Yeah.
Because I hate having out of anything.
Oh, IVs and then the Band-Aid after.
Like, I'm an extremely hard stick. So when they get that IV out in, I'm not going to randomly be pulling it out by no chance.
And you know me with needles. That arm is dead. I'm not moving it.
Yeah. When I was in the hospital, like, I'm sorry, I have to be in my arm and I'm trying to send work text messages. And I wish y'all could see this because, like, my arm was, like, straight out. And they were like, you can't bend your arm. And I was like, I'm sorry, but in human function, you have to be able to bend your arm. Mm-hmm. And the fact that she pulled that IV out and threw it at a police officer. I mean,
it's kind of boss, but like, still, ow.
Exactly. That's my big thing. Like, kudos to you, Miss Elizabeth. Sometime that same month, one of Luke's brothers was charged with assault of an officer. Another brother would be charged with domestic violence after punching a family member.
Elizabeth claimed that Luke's disappearance had destroyed her family.
Which we get.
Oh, 100%. She also said that it was ripping everyone apart.
Again,
we get.
Some news outlets used these stories to show criminal history within Luke's family. However, Elizabeth maintained that all of these incidents were because of the stress over Luke's case and the lack of support from law enforcement. In October, she took her complaints to a city council meeting. The meeting grew heated as she begged for more to be done regarding her son's disappearance and what she believed was possible foul play. At this point, she and her family were certain that Luke was no longer alive.
The family was asked to leave the meeting as the council members didn't think it was the right place for them to air out their frustrations with the police. Which, I mean, me being me, I'm like, you know, maybe there should be a cop there at the city council meeting. So, you want to guess what I did? I sent a text to someone who I know and was like, hey, are there ever police at city council meetings? Like, to watch the crowd or just be there in case something goes on? Or do they just have to be there when, you know, they need something? And to my shock, I was told that they now have a city police officer as security at the meetings because they were having a few unsavory people attend. And the mayor, well, the former mayor, thought it might be best for public safety, which, I mean, I do understand. And I mean, kudos to them for doing, because I could only imagine. But back to the story. At one point, the mayor said, quote, he couldn't discuss the case with them at all because he was completely unfamiliar with it, end quote. But later, after things heated up, he said to Elizabeth that the family's version of events didn't match up with the investigation facts.
So, he was unfamiliar with the case, yeah. Correct?
Uh-huh.
But then, old boy slipped up and said that the events that the family said happened are not what the police are saying happened.
Yeah.
He dumb.
I mean, you're not wrong. Like, it blows my mind how people can just suddenly know things. Which Elizabeth replied to him, quote, how could you possibly know that if you're unfamiliar with the case, end quote.
Exactly. I mean, if you're unfamiliar with the case, I'm going to be saying, hey, let me hear your side of the story. Mm-hmm. Let me start taking down notes and seeing what we can't do to get the ball going on this investigation.
Exactly.
Things of this nature, you just don't sit there and say, well, what you're saying doesn't match up with what's saying. Because if you're then saying, oh, by the way, this isn't matching up, boo-boo, you know something.
Oh, yeah. So I want to jump back for a second and talk about the case of Joshua Oberg again. It's hard to explain at the surface anyway if his case could be, you know, what happened to Luke. It's hard for anyone to make sense of basically what is small town gossip.
So as what we know, being in a small town, baby, them rumor mills get going like nobody's business.
Basically, but what we do know is that Joshua was found buried in a shallow grave near Bull Run Road. The two accused of his murder, Robert and Jesse, were found guilty. Joshua had last been seen on January 23rd, 2012.
I do have to ask one big crucial thing here.
Okay.
Was he seen getting into a vehicle?
He was. But unlike Luke, people saw Robert and Jesse in the vehicle. So as investigators kept tabs on the two, eventually Robert told the whole story of the killing to a confidential informant.
Which, of course, we know led to their arrest.
Exactly.
And do we know exactly what was said during this exchange?
He said that Chino had paid them a large sum of money to kill Joshua for having an affair with his wife. This confession also led authorities to his body.
And during the course of all this, was Chino arrested?
Yeah, I mean, he was found guilty of a lot of crimes. In court, do you care to read them?
Sure. Count number one, unlawful entry to the United States. Count two, possessing 16 firearms at his residence illegally. Count three, second degree murder. Count four, conspiracy to commit murder. It was also learned that Chino owned a Mexican restaurant in Buchanan. He had actually been deported twice before, and somehow he continued to slip back into the United States.
So during all of this, you might be shocked, but the rumors ran wild. There were stories regarding a possible connection to Luke.
I mean, at this point, we know how rumors go. It's like a big game of telephone. You start at one point telling what the truth is, and then at that point, everything gets added in.
Right, but however, none of the men involved in Joshua's case never admitted anything regarding Luke, while many people do believe that Chino was responsible for Luke's disappearance.
I mean, the one thing that I keep questioning is the fact that came out kind of quick for Joshua.
Yeah.
When Siren and Heater were arrested.
Right.
To be honest, they really don't seem like the brightest men.
I will agree. I mean, you kind of put someone in a shallow grave. If it rains, bing, bang, boom, someone's going to be shown. And like, why would you kill? Like, are you that hard up for money you need to kill someone to get $5,000?
It kind of makes you wonder, like, you know, in the old cartoons, like they would have a devil and an angel. Mm-hmm. And it kind of makes you think of like that scenario too. Like, would your conscience honestly... could you kill somebody for that type of money just to do it? I mean, in all honesty, when it goes back and forth a little bit, you have to think that there had to be something negotiated.
They
would
100%.
Have to negotiate it. And they would also have to use Luke's case to their advantage.
Yeah. I mean, you would think that, I mean, for example, one of them could have asked for a lighter sentence in exchange for leading officers to Luke's body.
Or even telling what happened.
Exactly. I mean, we all know this is the kind of thing that happens all the time. So it's interesting to me that all three men continue denying having any involvement with Luke's disappearance.
I mean, could it be an... I'm going to play devil's advocate right now.
Okay.
But could it be they were telling the truth? Or Were they just really, really good at keeping the secret of what happened to Luke?
I mean, there's a good possibility for both.
Hi, I'm Shane.
I'm Hannah.
And we're Country Roads Creeps. We're a podcast that covers all manner of creepy, spooky stories, from cryptids and conspiracies to unexplained deaths and disappearances to mysterious and paranormal happenings in the world.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts. Check out our Facebook page and our Instagram account at Country Roads Creeps for photo dumps and more information we'll post with every episode.
If you enjoy the show, please feel free to share us with your friends and leave us a 5-star review. And if there's any topics that you'd like to hear us cover in the future, feel free to message us on our social media accounts. Is that it?
That's it.
All right. Well, be safe driving home and watch out for the not deer.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey y'all, I'm Elisa.
And I'm Samantha.
And welcome to Watch for Deer Podcast. We're a couple of best friends from Southern West Virginia, and around here, Watch for Deer is our way of saying we love you and be safe.
This is a conversational podcast that covers many topics from A to Z, including, but not limited to, true crime and the paranormal. Our goal is to bring you an episode a week, so come listen as we tell stories that will make you laugh and maybe even blow your mind. Y'all be safe
and watch for deer.
Well, a lot of the town and even Luke's family looked at Chino and the other two as the ones who did something to Luke. If they aren't the ones who did it, then the real culprits are still getting away with it. While all of the attention are on these three, one thing I really want to know is why didn't police take more involvement in his disappearance? I mean, it's kind of suspicious AF.
I mean, in all honesty, I mean, do we possibly think there could have been a reason?
I mean, in all honesty, I'm not sure. I mean, there could be something that we just don't know. What we do know is that there was only one official search that was conducted in the area looking for Luke, but they never came out publicly to say anything, so we're really just kind of left in the dark.
Okay, scary. I've been thinking.
Okay.
How did nobody on the road see him at the end of his driveway?
Right.
I mean, we know there could be people driving by. People could possibly see it from their house. I mean, how does nobody see somebody getting into a vehicle?
See, that kind of gets me wondering too. And I mean, let's be honest, maybe they kind of just forgot. I mean, because I know if I'm driving and I see someone walking, I'm really not going to pay any attention to them other than to make sure I'm not going to hit them. And if they have a bike, I mean, it's kind of normal to see someone carrying a bike. I mean, if you're driving at a certain speed, you're not going to see if the bike is broke or not. And then, you know, if it's a gravel driveway with a lot of terrain or even a dirt driveway, I mean, I don't think you would want to be riding your bike down it. So, I mean, I kind of get it. But at the same time, I kind of wish someone would kind of speak up, being like, hey, I did see him.
It's so funny that you're that way, that you're paying attention to make sure that you're not going to hit somebody. And legit, anytime I see somebody walking down the road by themselves, I always keep note.
Yeah.
And even if I see elderly couples out driving, I mentally try to keep note of what kind of car they were in case something would happen and they would come up missing or something like that.
Right. But like, we also know my memory.
True.
It's not the best. So.
Man, it blows my mind though with how little Buchanan is that nobody seen this. So his bike that they found behind the CVS, no one saw the bike being placed there, like no security cameras, like nothing at all.
I did try to find that during my research, but as of right now, and how the police acted when they actually found the bike, I want to say maybe, yeah, there was security footage, but they just didn't care to look for it.
Do we know if he had a cell phone?
I'm not too sure. I've never seen anything reported on it.
So, this friend Dylan.
One of many.
Yeah, one of many. Why hasn't he came forward?
I mean, it seems simple enough. I mean, you're expecting your friend to come over and he doesn't even show up.
Or did he show up and then something happened?
I mean, it's a good possibility. You would think that this Dylan guy would come forward with information, or that detectives would have tried to track Dylan down. With all of the information we do have on this case, there are some possible theories that could be possible. One, there could have been an accident. Could he have went off into the woods and succumbed to the elements? Maybe the ride never showed up and he just started to walk.
I mean, he could have decided to take a shortcut through the woods.
I mean, that's a great possibility. Two, foul play at the hands of Chino. There's a good possibility this could have happened, and it seems to be what many people believe.
It's at this moment I wish that the three would talk and there would be some more evidence.
Oh, 100%. Three, I mean, there could have been some foul play caused by someone else. Who's to say, you know, who it could have been by after Luke left his house? This Dylan friend could have been involved.
And honestly, who's to say that Dylan is a guy?
Right? I mean, like, I kind of got thinking about it. If Luke was having an affair with Chino's wife, Dylan could be a girl. I mean, there's a good possibility about it.
And who's not to say that Dylan wasn't the co-word for Chino's wife?
I never thought about that. But who's to say that there wasn't a fight or an argument among friends?
I mean, in all honesty, it seems like these are the questions that could be answered if we could hear from, quotes, Dylan.
Yeah.
So if you're out there, send us a message.
Elizabeth, Luke's mother, started a Facebook page called Missing Luke Scout to help spread awareness. We will have it linked in the show notes so you can check it out. One thing you will notice is that he has several different looks, from long hair to short hair, to facial hair to no facial hair. And to me, it kind of reminds me of the case of Jack Denny, because Alex had so many pictures of him and Jack looked different in each picture, like long hair, facial hair, short hair, like totally different person.
His mom kept up with the Facebook page and posted regularly. It was her wish that she would learn what happened to Luke before she died. Sadly, she passed away in 2020.
In December of 2022, there was a three-day dig connected to Luke's case. Corporal S.W. Shahan with the Buchanan Detachment of the West Virginia State Police told My Buchanan, quote, "The December 12th through 14th search for Luke David Stout did not yield any new evidence and has been terminated due to inclement weather," end quote.
So was it ever known where they actually did the search at?
I mean, I've seen a picture of it, but all I know is that it was a property connected with his disappearance.
The three-day search brought state police, along with officers with the Upshur County Sheriff's Office and the FBI's evidence response team, to the dig site to supervise its excavation. The site is located about 8 miles southeast of Bell Cannon, near the old 33 Mini Mart, along the Middle Fork River, near the Upshur-Randolph County line. Shahan said he's been investigating both new and old leads in the case since the summer of 2021, when he was transferred to the Buchanan Detachment.
As of today, there isn't much happening in the case of Luke Stout, which is so sad to me.
Luke is described as 5'7" tall, weighing about 120 pounds at the time of his disappearance. He had brown hair and brown eyes. He was wearing a black t-shirt with the sleeves cut off, jeans, black sneakers with neon green shoelaces, and a light jacket.
Anyone with any information concerning the case is encouraged to call the West Virginia State Police Buchanan Detachment at 304-473-4200. We'll be back next week with a new case. If you find yourself enjoying Mountain State Mysteries, take a second to follow, download, and rate the show on your favorite podcast platform. It helps others find good West Virginia true crime podcasts.
Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube, all at Mountain State Mysteries.
Do you have a case you want us to cover? Send us an email at mountainstatemysteries304@gmail.com.
For the show notes, check out our website, mountainstatemysteriespodcast.com.